year 2000, after a long airplane flight to the United States from Israel, I developed a deep vein thrombosis in my right leg, which resulted in a pulmonary embolism. I threw a blood clot that went to my lungs and nearly killed me. Had I not been on my way to the hospital at the time, because of the swelling and pain in my leg when it occurred, I would have died. As it was, I was in very bad shape. You know things have gone terribly wrong when you've copped off blood all over the inside of your window in your car, and you've passed out having arrived at the hospital, and you awake in the ICU unit with the basset hound face of your district superintendent looking down at you and telling you that you're on medical leave. My embolism was particularly bad. It did some damage to my lung, and it took me a couple of months to actually recover enough before I could even think about going back to work. And during those months, I was at first at the hospital and then at my parents' house. And it was the first time in my ministry, my first time in over 10 years, that I was separated from the day to day, week to week, month to month, regular rhythms of church life. When your whole life orbits around church, its cycles and its rhythms, to suddenly have no or very little connection was very difficult. It felt like I had been ripped out of where my life found its meaning, where I found I had a place and belonging and significance, all ripped away from me because of a medical emergency. This experience, being ripped from the life cycle and an almost circadian rhythm of the church, has happened to me twice in my adult life. The second time it happened was when I was placed on suspension from ministry after Kate and I were married. A complaint was filed against me for getting married, and in the initial stages of the supervisory process, which is sometimes called just resolution, the bishop determined that it would be for the good of the conference that I be suspended from active ministry. Not only was I suspended from preaching and teaching and presiding at Holy Communion and administering the life of the church, I was also subsequently also informed that I was being barred from even entering or being in attendance at worship in reconciling congregations. Oh, I could attend church, I could go to worship in United Methodist churches, but they would have to be churches that were not reconciling churches. Oh, I could attend church, but the churches couldn't be accepting or might not be accepted. Not churches that had statements of affirmation like the one on the front of our bulletin, not affirming, not accepting, not welcoming LGBTQ persons. I could go to church, but it would be risky. And I wasn't about to do that to myself or to my husband. You see, my marriage was already being used as a political chess piece, as a reason that was being given by conservatives for disaffiliation from the United Methodist Church. One of the engagement photos that Kate and I had taken to announce our impending wedding was used as a car window leaflet, as propaganda to promote the cause of disaffiliation. They were saying, if you don't want this hideous abomination to become your pastor, you'll vote yes on disaffiliation. I wasn't about to darken the doors of a United Methodist Church where such a campaign was potentially underway. I wanted to go to church where I knew that I and my husband would be accepted and wouldn't be viewed as hideous abominations simply for being gay and married to each other. But I was barred from going to such churches. Why? Because of the highly charged and political character of my situation, of the complaint against me, of the disaffiliation process, a massive juggernaut that took over 50% of the churches out of the UMC in the Texas conferences. They didn't want me attending, reconciling, affirming, accepting United Methodist churches where I would be supported, where Cade would be supported and affirmed in our marriage. Photos of us being received and welcomed at reconciling churches were just too politically damaging. My going to reconciling churches was viewed as being subversive, as being damaging to the process. So in the midst of having been suspended from ministry for many months, feeling isolated and cut off, powerless, helpless, hopeless, marginalized, when I was desperately in need of community, of the embracing of the family of faith, the support of a family of faith, I was forced to stay away. To borrow the words of the author of the book of Hebrews, when I desperately wanted to draw near with faith, enter into God's sanctuary with confidence, approach God's grace with a true heart, and to have hope as we live and serve and grow as Christians among others, I was forced to do none of these things. I was denied presence in the family of God. Scripture calls us to be part of the community of faith, to be part of the ministry of the church, to be part of the fellowship and the common support of the church, to be part of the learning life of the church, to be part of the worship life of the church. And yet, often because of the church, many people don't. I was barred from it for more than 6 months, barred from attending where I would know I would be accepted. Many others, for similar reasons, stay away. The pain, the harm, the rejection that churches can generate, can create, can just be too much for battered and rejected souls. Souls rejected and battered, not by God, but by us, by the church. What does the author of Hebrews say? Let us approach with a true heart in full assurance of faith. It can be difficult to approach church with a true heart and full assurance of faith. It can be difficult to approach when the church fails, because it does fail. But when the church is at its best, when we are true to our faith, true to God's grace, true to the spirit of the love of God, not only we, but others can approach with a true heart. And it's so very important for us to provide a safe place for others, for those outside, for the marginalized, for those who have been rejected by the church, rejected by others calling themselves Christian, rejected by the society, by the government. We must provide a safe place for all to hear and experience, to live among and within an affirming community that shares and breathes and lives God's grace. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for the one who has promised is faithful. You know, it's a challenge, but we must hold fast to to the confession of our hope. Being present in the life of the church is one of the promises that we make when we join the United Methodist Church. Last week we explored prayer, the calling to be a people of prayer, to pray for the church and for others. And in our promises that we make, we affirm that we will support the church through prayers, presence, gifts, service, and witness. Today we're exploring presence. And it's clear that there are barriers to presence. Sometimes these barriers are physical, health and mobility issues, safety issues like back during the pandemic. Sometimes these barriers are mental, emotional, relational, church political barriers. Sometimes these barriers have to do with comfort zones, difficulty being in close proximity to others, even to people you know, can be a real barrier at times. And for some reason, the church excels in creating unnecessary barriers, like when it suspended me from attending where I would feel accepted and welcomed. Usually, it doesn't happen that way. But the message of exclusion is nevertheless real and frequently communicated, sometimes with words, but most often with actions. And yet, we promise to be present, to have confidence to enter the sanctuary, to approach with true heart and full assurance of faith, to be part of the life of the church in many ways, especially the ways that build up not just ourselves, but others, that support and help others in their journey and their spiritual growth, in their walk of faith, in their experience of the life and presence of God. And in doing that, we also are upheld and bolstered and strengthened and given grace to live and to grow spiritually in faith and hope and love. And let us consider, the author writes, let us consider how to provoke one another to love and good deeds, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another. Do you need encouragement today? I do. Life can be hard. We don't need the church making it harder. We need the church to provide a place of belonging, of comfort, of joy, of peace, of presence, of sharing, of serving, of helping. The promise to be present in the life of the church, to support the church through being present, is more than about being part of a community. It's more than coming into a sanctuary and worshiping. It's more than going to Bible study or to committees or to service and helping people. It's all of that and more together. It's about being in relationship with each other. I love how this verse puts it. Let us consider how to provoke one another to love and good deeds. Provoking. The original Greek word here means to stir up, to encourage, to agitate, to mix up, to cause to happen, to prod. How do we, by being present with each other, among each other, provoke each other to love and good deeds? Rather than stirring up, agitating, mixing up, prodding to conflict and disagreement, we're called to change, to be change agents, agents of love and acceptance, agents of grace for love and good deeds. One person working alone can do a tiny bit, a little bit, a minuscule amount to help. But together, as a group, as a community, as a family of faith, as a church, together, we can do so much more. And it starts by praying for each other, for the church, for the world, for our society, for those who are lost, for those who are found, for those who are seeking, for those who are hurting. It begins by prayer, and it continues by being prayerfully present with each other, to each other, for each other. As Christ was present to us, and through Christ's presence, we came to know the presence of God, the love of God displayed in preaching and teaching and healing and feeding, in loving, in sacrificing and dying, being raised again. So also, we experience God's presence when we share love and presence with others. Not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another. So, having made a promise to support the church through our prayers, presence, gifts, service, and witness, how are we living out these promises? Are we praying? Are we present? Where can we do better? Well, Greg, I'm here right now in the sanctuary or online. I'm present. Good. Why keep it a secret? Why not bring a friend to church? You may have neighbors who don't go to church anywhere, who may be members someplace or maybe even members here but haven't attended in months or years. Invite them. Studies show that 82% of people, if invited to church, will go. If not then perhaps at some point in the then near future. And yet, on average, only 2% of churchgoers invite others to church. Why not go on your phone or your iPad app and, while watching the service online, invite family or friends to join our worship service online. Last week, our worship service had over 200 people watching it, a substantial portion of it. But only 6 people shared it with their family and friends. That means that 6 people, once the service began, took a moment to tap that share symbol on their devices and posted it to their own Facebook news feed so that their family and friends on Facebook would see it either live or later and watch it. You know people who go to church nowhere, who are hungering and thirsting for a message of the love of God, but are afraid and have good reasons to be afraid of church. Invite, welcome, encourage, prod, welcome through all the means that you can them to come and be graced by God's love. Being present together for worship, for study, for service, for witness, for provoking one another to love and good deeds is a promise that we make to God and to each other. This season of Lent, in our sacrifice, I invited us to pick up anew and afresh these promises and to live them out by praying, by being present, by giving, by serving, and by witnessing. May we in this season, in this time of reflection, introspection, may we in this season of Lent be open to the needs of those around us, be open to provoking love and good deeds in and for others. And be of good courage and know that our hope is in the presence of Almighty God that we learned and celebrated in the life and ministry of Jesus the Christ. Let me dwell in your presence.